from the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Skills Hudson, as the problem child.
Good evening. Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse, where we get together once a week just to hang out and talk smack, smoke weed and drink a little cognac and just have a conversation. This week is going to be a little different because instead of having a celebrity guest as we've been doing lately, we're going to do this. I have some things I want to say to talk to you about. And so I'm going to take this opportunity to do that. In fact, that's pretty much why I started doing this MarshaCast, is that I had things I wanted to say to explain my point of view and how I got to it. And we got caught up in how you're supposed to do a podcast kind of thing and how things are supposed to go, and kind of lost the thread of what I wanted this to be about. I created the Marshaverse for a very specific reason, and I'll get into that. But first, I want to set the mood. You know, we got the candles, we got the incense, we got the basics going for a nice mellow mood for a conversation and discussion. But now it's time to introduce the cannabis and cognac that we will be enjoying, or that I will be enjoying. My two sons will be joining me later, and they will be enjoying whatever it is they like to have, just like I welcome and encourage you to have whatever adult refreshments or libations or snacks. You want a cookie? Go get a cookie. Whatever makes you feel good at this critical time of the day between yesterday and tomorrow, but what's only right now. Whatever gets you through those moments, please feel free to indulge. I decided this week to not get anything special, go back and visit some of the products that I've enjoyed previously on the show. And one of them is Shannon Sharpe's Shea VSOP. And I wanted to revisit this one because of Shannon's stellar performance in a hacked video. And so I'm going to have a little cognac in his honor. We weren't there to give him a round of applause, standing ovation, whatever. But I think it deserves recognition. Also, We got the cognac. We got the little swirl. We got to check the legs. And smells pretty good. Yeah, it's got a little pepper on it. You know, I just went to Sacramento and did a show at the Guild Theater. And it was a great show. I had a lot of fun. But I usually take a glass of cognac on stage. That's got some pepper. But anyway, I usually take a glass of cognac on stage. Timing just to have. I think it looks cool. And let's admit, we live a lot of our lives trying to look cool. But anyway, so usually, you know, sometimes they just bring me a drink from the bar. Fine, cool. I'm probably not going to drink most of it nowhere. Sometimes they bring me a bottle, you know, a nice bottle of cognac they wouldn't get. That's nice. I have a drink. And then somebody else has a bottle of cognac. When I was in Sacramento, they brought me like a gallon tub of cognac. They brought me, it should have had one of them spouts like the old sparkless bottles, you know, look. It was so much cognac. I'm like, I barely opened it when they set it down. It was about that much gone out the bottom. But that was very nice, and I appreciated the love they showed me, and had a good time doing stand-up. I love doing stand-up. That's my shit. I get to say what I want to say and do what I want to do. And that's what I love about being here. That I get to say, do what I want, make it be what I want it to be. And you like it or you don't, I hope you like it. And if you do, you know, comment and like it and share and all that good stuff. This is my favorite little vape mod. It's a, I don't know the name of it, but it's a stiletto. Ha ha ha. There you go. I'm going to turn it on. And this is a heavy hitters cart. I like them. So here we go. Well, that's not even hitting. That is. I don't want to take too much because I want to keep my wits about myself as we get into this subject. The Marshaverse is a reality that I recognize, not so much created. When I came back to start doing stand-up, I started noticing the things that I found funny. I started noticing the topics that I kept visiting. And I realized that they weren't separate topics. They were all interconnected. And so once I found the thread between them, I realized that my world, my point of view, was at odds with the reality of the world we are all born into, the world of the United States of America, the world of land of the free and home of the brave. Not really. And I, instead of coming at these various elements as separate issues, I put them all together and developed a show. I wanted to do stand-up, but I wanted to do stand-up from my point of view. I find that most of the comedians that I admire have a point of view. They don't necessarily have a specific act. They have a point of view that they speak from. And that's from Dick Gregory to George Carlin to Richard Pryor. It's their reality that they speak from about the world we all live in. And so my coming into the Marshaverse, it was over a long period of time. If you bear with me, I'll try to explain. It's hard to find a beginning to a circle and to a helix or to an hourglass, an infinity symbol. There is no real beginning. When I realized that I was not just bi-curious, that I was not just a free spirit, that I was indeed a lesbian, I had to come to terms with my upbringing and grooming. I had been groomed to be a straight woman. I got married when I was 18. I dabbled and dibbled, but didn't really step into the culture in any significant way. And so I realized that as a Easter and Christmas kind of Christian, that my reality, my dawning reality, was at odds with my faith. And so I vowed to read the Bible. I had never read the Bible. People had told me what was in the Bible. People tended to quote passages from the Bible, which I thought was a really weird way to communicate lessons from the Bible. Since nobody ever talked about reading it like a book and figuring out what it, you know, what the story is all about. So that's what I did. I read the Bible. And about 20 pages into it, I was pretty much done. I kept reading. I read the whole thing from start to finish. But where I am what it said, what it led me to investigate, from archaeology to anthropology to astrology and astronomy and everything else that might have a bearing on how human beings come to a religion. I still didn't get it. I didn't see me in that book. And it seemed to me very clearly to be an allegory, a series of allegories, and it seemed to be very clearly about the creation of the patriarchy. It seemed very clear that women were marginalized and pretty much demonized in many ways and cast most often as harlots and just marginal, but not always nice people. So I thought that the Genesis story of Adam and Eve was a men trying to create life, which they cannot do, as that is the feminine, the female of nature, to bring life from spirit to flesh. And in Genesis, God does that and breathes life into a human being. And we go from there. That was one thing that seemed clear, that it was, we're beginning to, like, this is, you're trying to make something happen that ain't happening, that can't happen. If you are comfortable with the rules of nature, you don't need God, because nature is. It's not, a theory. It is. It's every winter, is every snowflake, is every blade of grass, is everything you eat. It's everywhere. And so this creation of gods that deified men and made man gods from the time of the ancient Egyptians and on, you turn regular men into gods. It seems very much an exercise in futility that's just... it keeps people busy, because if you go back to Genesis, in the beginning, you have the creation of life. And then you see these series again of allegories where these beings grow up. They're naked. They're playful. God takes Adam around and to identify the animals, just like most parents will take the baby around and say, what's that? And the baby goes, a woof woof. And so names the animal, and that becomes animal. That's the woof woof. Until they get to be at adolescence and they realize they're naked. We were introduced to the element of puberty. And the snake talks to them and tells them it's okay to eat the apple. It seems very clearly a sexual puberty awakening that removes them from that childlike state into adulthood, which is where we pick it up and go from there. These are my theories, but this is what I came to see in that regard. And then as I started doing stand-up and having been working around men my entire career, I started to believe that everything we know is a lie, because everything we know is based on the premise that white men are superior and have the right to be our authority, everybody's authority. And that's a lie. You'll never get to equality with that premise. And it's the lie that's written into the founding fathers wrote it. First of all, they're the founding fathers. We're the founding mothers. We're the priestesses. In these religions, where are the women? And so they created a system that benefits white men and immediately makes everybody else inferior. The lie they wrote into the Constitution or the Declaration of whatever it was, all men are created equal. Literally, that phrase is true, as it's been practice in this country. It's never been anything close to true. And what was true about it was also what made it untrue. All men are created equal said by people who own slaves. The hell are you talking about? All men are created equal. What about the women? How are they created? Apparently, they're not created as equal to men. And so we start with this foundational lie and then come to all of the other foundational lies that grow out of that. If indeed white men are not superior, then everyone else has been diminished by force and by any means necessary, not by anything real. And when you have that, when you look at that, and then you think about when I was 17 years old, this is going to all make sense one day. When I was 17 years old, this man came to our school and said, if the definition of racism is the belief that one race is superior to another, all black people are racist. And so this was 1971. We all got mad. We all, you know, picked out our afros, raised our fists and said, what the fuck are you talking about? He said, if you believe that the definition of racism is the belief that one race is superior to another, all black people are racist because they believe white people are superior. And I wanted to be mad, but I couldn't. And I vowed right then never to approach another human being from the position that they were an authority, that they were better than me. They might have a different job. They might be able to, in another position, you know, be a boss, but they are never going to be a better person. And this was the time when you had to remind black people as a group that we were somebody. We were somebody. That was a phrase. I am somebody. Imagine growing up in a country where you're not only not a citizen, you ain't nobody. So you have all these things going around in your head. And I get talking about women's issues. There are women running for president against black men. This is historic. This is puts a lot of things into play that are not political, that are not it of the moment. They are foundational. They are visceral. They are built into the things we're indoctrinated with fundamentally from birth. Oh, it's a girl. It's a boy. I want a boy. And so we start indoctrinating people into that, those gender roles. And then you have the 60s where all these people being restricted by these kinds of attitudes and laws and customs start to rebel all at once. You have the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the anti-war movement, the hippie movement. You have all of these people, the young people, demanding a voice, demanding equality. And these laws and their efforts are making a difference. And they're having an influence in how diplomacy with the war going, how they're having an impact. And the people who want to be in charge have to counter those types of successes to maintain the white man in charge. And they're willing to go a long way. Every time we get closer to some sort of inclusion, they turn us back in a very, very dramatic way in with using a lot of different tools. But the backlash to the Civil War, we can, you know, trace that with the Google search. That's not a secret. After Reconstruction, the backlash and it led to Jim Crow. And so then when that system started to break apart, there was a backlash against the Civil Rights Acts. And they turned a lot of those victories back. As we've come into this time, the 1619 Project rocked the foundations of what people, Americans, know as true and started to be implemented into the curricula, to the school, elementary
curricula.
And they were going, children were hearing the truth, not just the white male point of view, but the inclusive truths, other people's perspectives on history that happened to them. And this pulled the covers off of the white makes right, white might makes right, all-American tough guy single-handedly ruling the world image that we've been indoctrinated with since cowboy movies and every other kind of way where the hero stands on deck and gets the glory of the flag in the background and the dutiful woman. And we learn that this is the way things are supposed to be. And that's just balderdash. It's just crap. It's not true. But we believe it. Even if we don't believe it, we believe it because that's how deeply ingrained those perceptions are. And they're the same or similar in everything. When you believe your homosexuality is a flaw of sorts that you have to cover up and hide, that you have to simply be. You have to protest, you have to profess it, you have to declare, you have to do things that don't matter, and they're not for you, they're not for your growth, they're not there to make other people comfortable about things they have no reason to be uncomfortable about. And so when I started talking about white people, we need to talk, it was because I realized that black people's voice was rarely directed to white people. It was about situations and the problems about black people, but they weren't about, yo, hey, this is why we mad. As if you have a right to say that.
White people, we need to talk. Today's topic, white Jesus. Now, I know it's hard being white nowadays. Everybody picking on y'all now that we learned to read. But I'm gonna be honest, I admire you guys. Y'all got game. Y'all painted Jesus white and got away with it. Y'all got people all over the world believing with all their hearts that 2,000 years ago or more, there was a tall, blonde, blue-eyed, white man running around in the Middle East, starting shit, and trying to tell everybody what to do. Y'all done John Wayne Jesus. And then, in y'all's story, when everybody got sick of him and decided that they was gonna get rid of him, y'all said it was a hit, and that it was taken out by his father. For me. Which means I'm supposed to bow down to you because you got to end with Jesus. If that ain't gangster, ain't no such thing. Most cultures worship gods who look like them. But y'all went to the four corners of the earth telling people they had to worship white-faced Jesus. And when you wasn't doing that, you was at home making people stop worshiping their religion and worship your version at gunpoint or the end of a rope or the sear of a lash or a weaponized penis. Now, the country that was founded by people running away from religious persecution wants to have white Jesus enshrined by law. But some of us prefer to worship gods who look like us. Gods who create life in her image. Male and female makes she them. She brings life from spirit to flesh, umbilically connected, and washed in her blood. She who created us, she who is us, Jesus. So let us worship the innate regality of uncrowned queens.
When I started talking about Sapphire Spirit and how your powers, your innate regality is mocked and demeaned. And so you're not just someone who commands attention in a room simply because of your presence. Now you're an intimidated, ball-busting, neck-rocking, angry black sapphire. And it said it spat at you so that you, well, no, I ain't. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And so you miss where when you're presented from somebody else's perspective, especially if it's deliberately skewed, it distorts your own inner perspective. And I think we're at a point now where we have to be mothered. And women have to just understand that we have the power to make the world different like that. All we have to do is decide to do it. We have the power to change from a society where men tell women what they can do with their bodies, where men decide how you are supposed to live your adult life. You are supposed to be married. You are supposed to be this, or else you're a childless cat lady. Ha ha ha. The hell are you talking about? This is just silly shit. If you don't want to do that, if you don't want to live like that, all you got to do is not vote for her. They have done the thing, you know, they spoke the quiet part out loud, but lived it. Okay. This is about gender. The elimination of the feminine power from the equation makes it a losing zero-sum game. You can't win when you don't have all your strength. And so they brought this down to its basics. Male, female, masculine, feminine. All the things we have been taught to associate with masculinity and all the things we've been taught to associate with femininity. Strength, weakness, dominance, submission. These things are on the ballot. And there's a lot of us who understand things on a visceral level that we can't always articulate. And I think a lot of women recognize that this is a moment, whether you give praise to the goddess who brought the confluence of these events together so that we could come to this moment in time as if we were called by the moon. Now, however you feel like we got here, this is the reality. You can win if you want to. You have the candidate who can bring feminine power to the party. Is she perfect? Ain't nobody perfect. That's not the point. Is she better than her opponent? That shouldn't even be a question. And so if you want to seize the moment and quietly pull one of those and just win by being the powerful life giver that you are. And I can talk about a lot of this kind of stuff and bring it all back together, but that's what the Marshallverse is. It's not just here on this platform. It's in my stand-up. It's in everything, where everything comes together from the foundational lies we've been taught to the natural truth that we've allowed ourselves to see. So that's my little TED talk for today. Midnight in the Marshverse is brought to you by Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings. Aunt Karen knows that after a long day of being an official trumpet for Jesus and all that entails, your mom's for liberty duties of scouring school board programs to eliminate any mention of drag queens, trans women, and black people, and protecting your neighbors from rogue cookie and lemonade sales children, playing kissy face with your pets on kitchen counters, and threatening delivery and tradesmen with bogus rate charges and screaming like a banshee for no apparent reason. Who has time after all of that to make a hearty, delicious family meal? Nobody. That's why Aunt Karen is introducing a new convenience food line with you in mind. Hortibles. With a looming civil war and or religious apocalypse on the horizon, fingers crossed all goes according to Project 25, what could be better than powdered and freeze-dried three-course meal capsule packs that are ready in a minute and have a shelf life of forever? From sushi to spaghetti to s'mores, Aunt Karen has a hoardable just for you. So stock up your cabinets, cellars, attics, and safe rooms with these delicious biologically engineered packets that fit in a pocket, purse, wallet, or backpack, and you'll never have to cook again. Because Aunt Karen knows that making America white again is not only a full-time job, but a suburban housewife's lifelong commitment and dream. I'd like to present to you two very important people in my life. These young men are not only very funny and talented and all of that, but they've been my support group for the past 8-9 years. And so I want to bring to you I'm going to bring my baby boy out, my problem child. I say that with all the affection in the world. So say hello to Skills Hudson. Hi, baby.
Hey, Mom.
How you doing?
Great and invigorated by your I call it I had a mom moment of clarity.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that to hear you say that, because there was a couple of times there when, you know, the stuff in my head starts overwhelming the stuff coming out of my mouth, and I get lost in my own train. Smokey Robinson had a song that said, "The words from my heart get caught up in my throat." And sometimes that happens when I'm talking, when I'm smoking weed. It's all discombobulated. Anyway, now I want to bring my oldest son, the one who looks more like me. I want to say hello to what name do I have for you? I can't do better than Mr. Ferry Roberts. Say hello to Stephen Roberts. Roberts.
Yay! Robert.
Hi.
Hi. How are you, Mom?
I'm fine. You should have a sign under your name that says Stephen, not Stevie.
Oh, I like Stevie from you.
Now you're taking it back. You told me never call you Stevie.
No, I tell you never to call me Steve.
Okay.
You can't call me Steve, but you can call me Stevie. Okay. Especially my two moms both call me Stevie, and they're the only ones who get to call me that.
Stevie. Mm-hmm. Skills. What Skills name me. Can I not call you?
Oh, don't call me Emmanuel.
Okay. Why?
Because it was always mispronounced growing up. Emmanuel was some wasn't even
Manya.
Did anybody call you Manuel?
Yes.
Manuel. Yeah. Did anybody call you Manny?
Yep, Manny.
Manny.
So no, you're my baby boy Skills. So you heard me wax poetic about the coming election and how I think it's a battle of good and evil and feminine versus masculine, which are arbitrary qualities anyway. But what is your opinion about who people should be or could be? How do you see in this election upcoming?
Well, I'd like to give you also more credit than when you saying about just how we go into like the lecture cycle, because how you began it, how you was allowing us, which we were there, but also reminding us like how it started. Like, I mean, we wasn't there from the beginning of, you know what I mean? But you know what I'm saying? Hearing like your set at the beginning and then how it flourished, but then also hearing now the backstory of all that. And then I was so into that, that then when you went into the politics and it all just encompassed everything. And I'm like, I was even taking notes where like the whole power structure, you know what I'm saying, of Stephen people. And I'm like, no, I'm just fucking, I love you. But the white male power structure and how it was like
indoctrinated.
Yes, into us. And I remember just young thinking of everything like that was powerful was like white, like from the superhero Superman. Rocky, and I was a big fan. But now as I got older, I'm like, wait a minute, it was black boxers, even the what's name that was on there? It was Adversary. But just Apollo, those things like
Apollo Creed. Yeah, yes. We had a Muhammad Ali though.
Yes. Yeah.
A real live flesh and blood hero.
Yes, that was a little bit before I was young. But yeah. But what I was saying is, though, Mon, that, and then, so now to answer your question about politics, what was the question?
Who are you going to vote for?
Oh, I'm voting for Kamala. But, like, it just, it sometimes gets tiresome of verbally debating, not even debating, just even having a cordial conversation with any individual that's not voting for Kamala, because they coming, they like you can show them the, you know, facts, proof, and everything, and they will look at them facts and proof and come with all lies. Like, well, I got lies. These lies.
Just like I said, I was taught certain things. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, all white, everything. You saw a black person shoveling snow in Canada on TV, and you went, hey, call everybody. It's a black man on TV. That's how rare it was. It turned everything. And women, and hey, darling, would you like another cup of coffee? And that was your role. And if you were black, you had to assimilate to pretend to be one or the other of those. You had to be a black darling. Would you like a cup of coffee? Or you could be the, y'all want another cup of coffee? Kind of made person. But raised with those kind of stereotypes. And everybody was raised with, and I don't know why I started, you said something that triggered it. But growing up like that, it shapes your perspective about things. And you see how they like allowed blaxploitation to take hold and minstrel sitcoms to take hold as a backlash to the Black Power movement. And what I wanted to say about something you said, Skill, and what you'd say, America, you see the whole thing in a whole different light. Now imagine what Colin Kaepernick represents to people who were raised with that truth about veneration of the flag, yeah. Okay? Just like I learned what I learned, they learned a whole different history. They learned a history of inclusion, of what's about them, and it wasn't so necessarily overt, but all the pictures they saw were white people doing well and black people and everybody else fighting and struggling and hollering in the street and rioting. And what's wrong with those people? Because they lived a whole different experience on purpose. And so it's like, why do we all have these different but collective points of view? It's how we were taught on purpose. Those schools were designed to teach you how to go to work, come home, have dinner, watch TV, go to work. Not to aspire to be nothing, to do nothing, to go further. We weren't even exposed to most of the possibilities that were out there. You go up, you go to work, you drive your bus, you come home, you do it. And that's what you're supposed to do. And so getting people out of that mindset enough to see the world from their own real point of view, their own skills verse, their own Stephen verse, is very hard because we're raised in this thing to see things a certain way, and why you can't deviate, you know, why you must go to church, why you must do these things, because if you don't, the whole fucking system falls apart.
Imagine being a white gay boy in Texas who knows that he does not fit in and does not measure up to the football playing, gun toting Texas accent, truck nuts kind of culture that I grew up in, and especially in the church. I went to church 3 days a week, and knowing that I was different and knowing that I did not fit in and having to act straight and act, you know, it's funny because people have come up to me many, many times in my life and said, "You're gay, you don't act gay." And I think, I don't see how you don't see it. And I
did we lose you? We lost you for a minute, honey. Stephen, come back.
Come back to us.
Any kind of fool could see there was something in everything about you. Stephen, come back.
Come back. Come back.
You can blame it all on me. I was wrong, and I just can't live without you. Okay, so we lost you.
Start. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So anyway, growing up in that culture and people saying you don't act gay, well, I started to realize that I was passing for survival and that I didn't have to do that. And then I moved to Chicago and moved to Boys Town and found that part of me. And went to the parades and went to meetings and protested and got involved and found myself and really had to unlearn a lot of things that I was taught about white people without them saying it, without them directly telling me. And I will tell you, one of the hardest things to do is to admit that you have racist thoughts on a daily basis. And you know what? I do. I do have racist thoughts, and the best way to combat them is to be honest about them and talk about them and to recognize them and acknowledge and then thank them very much for showing up in your head and then moving on. So that's really what it's about. And I consider myself a very lucky person because I grew up on the border of Mexico. And I learned very quickly that there's more than one way to live. There's more than one culture in the world. And there's more than one language. There's more than one religion. And so I've always felt very, very lucky that I had that. And then the second part, the main question, which is who are you going to vote for, is I would like to address that by saying I don't understand people who haven't. They're like, I'm undecided. You know, there's going to be people who you expect to want to vote for Donald Trump. You know, I mean, there's going to be people like that. But people who haven't decided yet, David Sedaris just said just recently, he goes, it's like the flight attendant comes up to you and say, would you like chicken or would you like a big pile of poop with broken glass on it? And then you say, What's in the chicken? You're only gonna choose the chicken anyway, so choose fucking chicken. What is your deal that you really need to compare still? Like, what is there to compare? There's nothing to compare.
I have a question. You were talking about so much like having racial thoughts and mm-hmm. racist thoughts. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, have you ever internalized your homophobia?
Oh, yes. Oh, for sure. In fact, I think I identified that first.
Yeah.
Well, I thought like I had disdain for drag queens when I was really young. I had like a lot of young gay men, they wanted to date straight guys. And another one was, you know, I didn't like what back in the 80s we called Nelly guys. Now they call them feminine or twinks. You know, I didn't want anything to do with that because I'm a guy. And, you know, that was so my self-loathing in a nutshell. And then, you know, eventually I made it to places like Chicago and I started to learn that all that stuff was really great. In fact, you know, I really learned my lesson with straight guys by the time I was 21, and that's just an outlet for self-hatred. It really is. It's like, I need to have that to prove my worth.
So one thing that I think we could all take away from is if you are born into a lesser than position, you spend most of your life from that point on in a kind of therapy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trying to mentally adjust to your place in this alternate reality.
A recovery.
The sub-America that we have to exist in. And I think that's another topic that's in the Marshallverse that needs a whole lot more exploration. The reality of how so many groups created a parallel system to everything, a parallel religious system, even if they were within the same Christian community. They are Asian Christian communities that sing the same hymns and stuff, but they're very much an Asian Christian community. And they're, you know, you could say the same thing, but different ethnic groups who all are united in their faith, but they're different cultures. And to have all of these kind of parallel Americans that have woven this fabric is so fascinating to me. And it's not, it's the strength that Kamala Harris is trying to project. This, all of us with all of our stories, we're all American. We all grew up American, but we all retained something of who we are and made this really potentially great fucking never before done thing. If we just do it, you know, if we just do it, the path is there. The time is now, the opportunity is right before us. We can change this whole world like that. Just like I think the Obama embracing the Defense of Marriage Act turned the switch on LGBTQ perception.
Right.
It made it okay to be gay.
Yes. And I would like to remind you that Joe Biden is the one that pushed it when President Obama wasn't quite ready to go that far. Right. And Joe Biden just basically threw the kitty in the water.
But so... as we celebrate this, we know that the equal and opposite side finds that reason not to vote or not to celebrate these people at all. They're scum because they pushed that LGBT, that gay thing. And so we don't really get to say out loud that that's what's happening, that this is the exact opposite of that. This is the backlash to the idea that you could have a much better America when you celebrate all the threads in the flag and not just limit it to
when certain segments rallying.
But you know, time after time, whenever I get into discussions or arguments, or they go from discussion to argument, and I am having that discussion or argument about equality, about corporate America versus non-corporate America, any of those kinds of topics, immigration being a big one, right? All of those topics that are hot buttons, abortion, and I'm getting blowback and I'm feeling like, you know, they don't even see, every single time it's a white straight guy. Every single time. I haven't had this argument with a black person. I haven't had this conversation or argument with a Latino person. I haven't had it with a gay person. I haven't had it with anybody but straight white men. And what happens now is I just remind myself, oh, that's right. He's a straight white guy. He's over the age of 50. So of course, I mean, there's nothing for those guys to lose, especially if they're wealthy. If you're a wealthy, straight, white guy over the age of 60, you're absolutely going to vote for Trump. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? There's nothing in it for you on the other side.
Because he's an idiot. That's good enough reason. And if I'm counting on somebody to handle my money to make sure I get paid, I don't want an idiot, a lying idiot in charge. Unless I can control him in some kind of way, get this blubbering fool
off
my radar.
He's buyable. You can buy him. You can buy his loyalty. So many corporations that were against him are now for him because you'll see all, and vice versa, stuff that he talked against, such as Elon Musk.
Control him.
Right.
But the point is you can't. They can't. He's not.
Because he's a liar. Because nothing is true. You never know what you're going
to
get
with
him.
There is no truth. And he will say the same lies to you as he will say to me. And you think you got him locked up, and you don't. There's just nothing there to vote for.
His whole thing is, how can I tip the needle to the place where I want it? All he's doing is trying to move the needle to where he wants so that he can have power. He doesn't care. He has absolutely no care about any of these things. He just wants the money.
It's like, me want girl, me get girl. Me want White House, me in White House. I mean, it doesn't go any deeper than that.
No.
Even though I know you say that it's not as deep as that, but that racial component on the Republican side, like, okay, on our side, we got like, okay, inclusion, you know, all the threads that you were talking about of the flag and that change of America, how America should be. And then you got the old arms that's still saying like, hey, like basically, all right, we're going to go, we got this whole country, but all right, these few white people, let us represent y'all though. Let us go represent. Well, you got the other side, like, hey, we're going to send five of the different races. You know what I'm saying? Y'all go, blah, blah, blah. Hey, they like, nah, we're going to. And it's the racial component that ties in with, like how you said, that even the people that grew up, even white people that's indoctrinated into that system that and taught everything, and then having, as they got older, educated themselves because they just choose to now not educate themselves and to change that thought process, that it, because it, the decision is clear. It's clear. You know what I'm saying?
The children will save us. The young people see that. The young people see that. And they see their parents digging in. And they see that they have a chance, especially if they're 18, 19, first time vote, they have a chance to change stuff. And I think if we recognize them, not change them, not just recognize them, that they are smarter than they're given credit for, and they're more passionate and aware, and they're ready. They get it. And we're not encouraged to think on the level that I think ancestral people and tribal people do, where there is a fact, there is this, but then there is the knowing. You just know. There are some things that your mama told you, boy, you just know. That's how you know. And when you can embrace that level of knowingness, it doesn't always have to be expressed. It doesn't have to, you just know. And I think the kids know. I think they know more than we give them credit for. And they're ready to participate and don't see a big deal. Why are we going out marching and doing it? We just go vote. And I think that's going to surprise people. So,
let's not talk about him anymore.
You got, was there a 2-minute rant? I think I've ranted for
I think week. We've ranted a lot.
I gave my rant. What's a happy thought?
Some happy song.
Sing a happy song. I got a card. I don't know what to say. It says, if you could let go of something right now, no matter how big or small, what would it be?
Fear.
Good answer.
And I, you know, not just total fear, because let me rephrase that, because fear with awareness is okay. You know, me as a black man, you know, if I'm walking and, you know, awareness and it's, I can choose to walk away from a situation or don't to engage in a situation. But the fear I'll be talking about is like in situations that I know that I'm prepared, but I allow mental like jousting within myself to do that. He's back.
Yeah.
He's back like my chest hair. Yeah.
The fear, they call it now, the kids call it the imposter syndrome, the fear of not being good enough, which is a byproduct of being born into a system where they've told you from birth, you are not good enough. You are not ever going to be good enough. And so we have this irrational fear in every situation that you're not only prepared for, you're born for. That's what you do. It shouldn't even be a thought. You know, and because it's so obvious, the theater kids are so obvious, the military kids are so obvious. You are who you are. And so these things should be taken for granted, but we feel like we have to earn the right to be who we are. And so every situation is you have that apprehension, that uncertainty, that I'm not good enough, when in reality, you're a star.
Yep.
We don't tell each other that. I was thinking of when I was making my notes for what I was going to say on this show. One of the things, because there's so much, I was talking last week about how the nuclear family came to be through this same kind of process of the backlash against women's rights and civil rights. They had to come up with a way to take the onus off the government and the Americanness and put it back on the victims. And so the problem was not that the system was such that men couldn't make a living and that they had never been allowed to really marry or have benefit from it and all that kind of stuff. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that there are no men in the house, and that's the woman's fault. And so then they turn all the statistics around. See, families with fathers do better than families with just a single man. Yes, because they have money. They have, you pay the men more, and you don't let the women leave. And you set the system up for that to be the truth. Not necessarily that is the most, even the most beneficial outcome. Because there are many ways to family. There are many ways to create a community. And so we have these these notions of what family is, because we've been drilled in, you got to have a father, you got to have a mom, you got to, no. And that was never the point. The families before you instituted this, these rules, there were, welfare was for white women, not black women. And black women had to fight to get those benefits.
And if you were a black woman on welfare, you were suspect.
Of course.
Immediately.
And it's your fault because you had sex with these ne'er-do-well men, and the men were now, and it was never ever a situation where marriage was no benefit to this couple because the system was not set up to accommodate them.
Yeah, when Ronald Reagan talked about welfare queens, we all knew exactly what he was saying. Knew exactly what he was saying.
With Willie Horton and all of those things too. But they, yep, they just create a like a national inferiority complex.
Yes. If you say something long enough, people, you will start to believe it.
That's why you don't call your kids stupid.
You hey, can I say what they, you left what? Stephen and came back? And your microphone sounds horrible.
I bet it does because I'm on my phone now because my computer and my internet sucks. I would like to take this moment to tell everybody that Verizon was made by Karen. Aunt Karen made Verizon.
Okay. Well, listen, I could talk to you guys forever. I love having this forum so that we can talk. I hope people like listening to it and maybe have opinions they want to contribute. But I most love the idea of just sitting here and invite you into the Marshaverse and kind of let you in on how I see things. Might not be the way you do, but maybe it's worth being into, put into the conversation. You're going to be where this weekend, this week? Where are you going to be?
My bad. I'm over here focused on my notes.
We could go on, but we can't. We gotta out. We gotta go.
Okay. This Friday, Show Those Skills at Jimmy Kimmel's, 11:30, Sunday and Monday with Lunell, 9:30, Jimmy Kimmel's.
All right, Steven, you going to be somewhere with your clothes on?
I'm going to keep my clothes on all through this month of October coming up, including this weekend, the end of September. You can see me at Puppetry of the Penis, as the opening act. I do not take my penis out. It stays inside the pants. And you can also go to Woku and see I'm the interviewing host for the documentary series Behind the Comedian. Love for you to look up. Woku is free. You don't have to pay for anything. The show is Behind the Comedian, and I'm this season's host.
Yay. And yeah. I am going to be back here in the Marshaverse next week. And I am also, I did Night Court again.
Yay!
That should be coming out whenever it comes out, but I had a ball. And I'm going to be doing the First Ladies of Disco on the 29th for their tea dance, the happiest show I've ever been in. And I'll be at the Comedy Cellar, the Rio, this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. So, like I said, if you like it, leave us a line, comment, whatever, come back, tell your friends. And if you got an opinion, share it. Love to see you next week. Y'all take care. Love you both.
Got a way, no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she comes to life.